This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Michael Martin and Michael Rowe.
This is episode 12. We're going old school.
Hello, this is Michael Martin, and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I'm here with my co-host, Michael Rowe.
Hello, this is Michael Rowe.
Rowe.
Your co-host.
And we won't go into other accents just yet, but maybe we will. We're going back to school.
Yes.
We're going back to school this week for our show. We've got some rather incredible links that we meandered our way into that we think exemplify the founding principles upon which these podcasts really started, which is having fun at work and engaging people in play that drives more learning and creativity and business results. And I think these couple of examples are just, you know, are perfect. They make the point.
They are. And we want to thank James Governor from Red Monk for the link that he tweeted out today that got me going down this path to find this fun and exciting gaming of developer learning.
Right. So this is about Git, G-I-T. So for our non-developer friends out there, Michael, how would you describe this open source facility?
So it's real simple, right? When you write code on a team, one of the things you need to do is make sure that everybody has the latest copy, and that if you and I are both editing something, that we're able to work on our own stuff and merge it back into the larger pool of code as we move forward. And Git is a facility hosted on GitHub, or you can get your own copy and run it locally to do source code management.
So we can check in and check out things, and you know that I've got it, I know that you've got it, and we don't clash or merge or do bad things with the code.
Well, you want to merge when you want to merge, right?
Yeah.
You want to understand conflicts. You want to deal with all that good stuff. I mean, it's a very, very standard, traditional thing in most development shops to use some kind of source code management system. And even if you're an individual developer by yourself, you want to make sure that if you're about to test out adding a new feature in, that you don't clobber your own code and not be able to get back to a working piece of code. The other nice thing is when you're talking about source code management systems is you release an app, you're working on the next release of it, doing some bug fixes, etc., and you're planning on releasing version 2. You've just released version 1, but a bug comes in and you need to fix it immediately and get it out there. Well, you don't want to roll out version 2 ahead of its schedule because it's not done. So you need to be able to go back to version 1, grab it, grab all the code, fix the bug, and deploy that new piece of functionality out to your users. And so a source code management system allows you to do that.
Cool.
So, very simple.
So what James did is he sent a link to the try.github.com website where you could actually go and use a game to track a little OctoCat text file and see how this actually might work. And the game, as it were, walks you through a series of command line steps so you can actually see how your file would be into the repository and how it could be managed, maintained, and et cetera.
Yep. And if you've never used Git as your SCM, it's a good way to kind of get familiar with Git. Right?
Get familiar with Git. Yes.
Yes. So you know, it was kind of interesting. And you and I had a chat, you know, is this really a game? It seems to be, you know, a way of just teaching people a bunch of command lines and getting them familiar with something. And one of the things that I got to is by the time you get to step 10, it actually, and this is genius, right, forces you, if you want to continue playing with the game, to go and register a GitHub account. Which is free, so that you can then continue the rest of the course. So not only has it taught you some basic commands, it's actually engaged you with the GitHub community, which is about 1 million developers on a global basis, and kind of gets you walking down the path to say, oh, I kind of get Git, kind of makes sense. Maybe I ought to use this for my next project that I'm working on. So that's really cool. But the really cool thing about it is we were looking at this site and kind of playing with it a little bit. And at the bottom left, it tells you who developed it. And right. It's a company called Code School.
Yes. And not old school, but Code School.
That's where I was going to. And if you're old school, you might want some Code School. Brought to you by the guys at Code School who are old school in their Code School. Now, that's horrible. Anyway, so clicking over there was actually much more interesting because they've actually wrapped a game around learning different aspects of the software developer lifecycle. And as you mentioned in the intro, one of the things that you and I both got really excited about, I think it's been, can I say the word, almost 10 years?
No.
Yes.
No.
2003.
Was it that long?
2003, 2002 was Dancing with Wookiees. Mm. Yes, it has been that long.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? And the idea of, you know, we used to joke around about people on Star Wars Galaxies dancing with Wookiees. And we said, you know, I can imagine, you know, gaming the development learning process and, you know, leveling up to a level 3 Java developer. Well, holy crap. Here it is. So Code School actually is a series of lessons where you can play the first level for free on a couple of them to teach you things like mobile development using CSS and HTML5, right. Testing capabilities with RSpec, real-time web development using Node.js. And each of these are, you know, open enrollment. Anybody can go there. You can take these courses. And they each have a gaming aspect to them. And as you and I were both watching the video for this on the mobile course, and we have badges, so we need some thinking badges, which is kind of cool. We have rewards, so you level up points. Each lesson inside of a larger course will have, you know, a certain amount of points that you get for it. There's rewards out of that. So if you successfully complete one course, and looking at the mobile one as an example, you get a $5 credit mm-hmm. for another course. Genius, right? Genius.
Sure.
So, and you have a social reputation that you build up of which courses you've taken, which can help you on your CV or resume when you're trying to get a new job. You can say, well, I've successfully completed the 3 courses on mobile development, and I've got a background in JavaScript and yada, yada, yada. So you now have a space that allows you to showcase your learnings, and you can tie that potentially, since it's just a web page with a reputation board, to your personal blog, to maybe, you know, some other things that you've been doing and developing on, where you can then say, here's the courses I've taken, here's the 3 apps that I've got out on the Google Play App Store, etc. And you start building up a larger reputation that starts with playing a game of Journey into Mobile.
Yes.
Pretty yes. cool.
And you know, you could see where this might be something that you could then click into your other profiles as well. So not just on your blog, not just on your LinkedIn account, but if you are part of a member of a large crowdsourcing kind of development team, wouldn't it be cool to have these skills and the level of which you've attained to these skills be automatically connected in to them so that you are now certified as a level 3 JavaScript programmer, or that you're fully knowledgeable on Ruby and able to take advantage of competitions and the like that might be coming your way, and have them directed at you based upon your skill and learning.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was reading an article yesterday out of Wired magazine about the guy who started Stack Overflow.
Ah, okay, cool.
Familiar with Stack Overflow?
I know about him.
Yeah, so Stack Overflow, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with this site, is to me, one of the best programmer resources for getting your technical questions answered. And it's free, it's open. You log in either with an OpenID account, or you can create an account on Stack Overflow itself. And as you ask and answer questions, we have badges. Right. So the first time you answer a question, you get a badge. The first time you correct somebody else's answer, there's a different badge. The more your answers on questions are voted up by other developers, the more credibility you get, the higher your score and points are. At certain levels, your badges go from, you know, bronze to silver to gold. There's this whole kind of gaming mechanic, reputation management system built into it. And I personally have found that the feedback and the answers that you get from that community are phenomenal, because it's not just about getting an answer. It's about getting the right answer. And the way the community is built from a game perspective, getting the right answer means getting an answer that's been upvoted by many, many, many people, which, again, improves their score, improves your code. And the article in Wired was talking about the guy, and he had originally been using another tool which was kind of similar, but it was, you know, experts behind a paywall. So if you paid X number of dollars a month, whatever, you could then get behind the paywall and post a question, and one of a group of approved experts would respond. And so thinking about that from a developer perspective, you know, you want your answer now, and you want it, you know, convenient, and you want to make sure that the expert is someone that you respect as an expert, not just somebody who is a quote-unquote expert because they're behind the paywall. And so Stack Overflow really becomes that answer, right? It's a community, just like, you know, GitHub with their million developers. And it's a way of learning and improving yourself through a set of social recognitions, set of things that you might want to try. You can become experts around certain tags. So, you know, going back to our prior podcast where we were dealing with social tags,
right.
Everything in GitHub is not in GitHub, sorry. Everything in Stack Overflow is tagged. So you can actually ask your question, and before you ask, it'll say, hey, here's 30 different things that are tagged similarly. Are these the things that you are really asking about? Go read one of these answers first. So you get you reduce the noise level. And if not, well, hey, maybe you need to add these three additional tags to make your post more relevant. And you have people who focus on specific tags. So, you know, again, a great mechanic for improving your developer skills using many of the gaming mechanics around reputation, around rewards, around, you know, complex open problems that are exciting to work on and to improve. And I think that leads us right to a great link that our good buddy Andy Piper sent us.
Yes, it does. While you were chatting, I do want to take a slight detour, and then we'll come right back to Andy's link here too.
Yep.
And that is, I was looking at the Envy Labs.
Yeah, me too. I clicked through to it.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, here are the people who were the folks that helped build Code School. And there's some interesting looking, I didn't watch them because, you know, we're podcasting right now, but there's some interesting little videos about the Code School creation and what they're thinking along the lines were here. So this is something we need to take a quick peek at a later point in time.
Yeah, or, you know, if you personally have experience with either Code School or with some of the other projects that Envy Labs is working on, why don't you know, drop a comment into the show post that we will have of this episode.
Right. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
So moving along to Andy's post to us about the four keys to fun over on Pinterest from...
Pinterest.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're just not up on the social Pinterest thing.
I'm not on the Pinterest thing. I've done a few of the other things. But anyway,
Pinterest, like the number one thing from months ago. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
It was awesome. I just didn't load it up and actually
jump
use
fast
it.
Enough.
Yeah.
On to the next one.
It's funny that Pinterest showing up on, you know, Pin Me and like it was Friend Me and Like Me and Tweet Me, but I don't think Pinterest has gotten the same level of focus there, especially now with the acquisitions made. Anyway, never mind. We're on to Four Keys to Fun.
And, yes.
And I liked this graphic. It's actually from the copyrights on it appears to be from 2010.
It's back in the day.
Back in the day, and it was based upon
work in 2003.
This company's work from 2003, 2004. So, but it is as relevant today as it seems like it was then.
Well, I don't think there's any reason why we'd have changed why we play games, right?
Probably not, but you know where it comes from and what the objectives are for the particular kinds of games. I think this does a really nice job of showing where you go. So the hard fun, right at the top of the 12 o'clock portion of this particular graphic, it is talking about what we've talked about from Jane's book here too, Jane McGonigal's book on Fiero being being in the moment, in the zone, seeing that hard fun. Just to master something and understand it thoroughly, completely, having fun, but focusing that fun on getting through those bigger challenges that are super engaging.
Well, so, one of the really cool things, and sorry, I'm going to jump in because that's what we do on this show, right?
Yeah.
As I was looking through this in kind of detail, it reminded me of the work that Raph Koster did, who was one of the original designers of Star Wars Galaxies, which takes us back to Dancing with Wookiees, about the type of player you are, right? So this talks about the type of output and expectation and behaviors, right? And he had done some work, and this would have been about 2002, 2003 timeframe, on the type of player, with the idea that, there are people who like exploring, there are people who like challenges, and there are people who like creating. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of map that into here. So the challenges are the Fiero moments, right? The exploring is kind of a social thing or a curiosity thing, so it can either be people fun or easy fun, right? So community or achievement. And the createment, let's say people fun, exploring fun is the curiosity, and the createment aspect is kind of the amusement, excitement stuff. So you have somewhat of a map, not completely, but it really drives into the aspect of there are types of fun and types of people, and the intersection really are these four keys.
Right, right. I would tend to agree with you, and that is a way of mapping. I like that mapping. I think that makes a lot of sense because there are different reasons for different kinds of fun, like you just outlined, that you may want at any particular point in space.
Yeah, but no, I mean this the thing that really got me is we're visualization nuts, right? And there's almost like what I need. And I haven't seen this, and I'm sure it exists. A visualization on visualizations.
We did chat about that before.
Is there one out there? There has to be.
I'm sure there is. If we went looking for it, we probably could find it. And if we can't, then we kind of look for that there.
Yeah, because this visualization. So it's too big to fit on my screen. So if I shrink it down so the whole thing fits, some of the text gets blurry. But it's kind of cool because it looks like a starburst. It looks like a flower, right? Both are exciting and calming and enjoyable things, right?
Right.
Which if you think about it, is fun, which is the whole idea of the message here.
Yeah, exactly.
So exposing the data in a way that reflects the data is, a great visualization. So, sorry, but I digressed. Go ahead.
Where I was going is, and you kind of have to blow up this chart here a little bit to kind of see into it a bit better. The angle of the off-track play, for example, this is in the vehicle for imagination. If you're thinking about what they've categorized here as easy fun, and less focused on badges and rewards, right? So you're in these would be games like Vice City, you know, could be an example of this, where you're given the city and you can certainly can follow the storyline, and there's some interesting things, we'll just say, in the storyline there. But you can travel around the entire city and explore and see other things, drive around the roads, and you're not forced into the storyline. And there are a lot of games that work that way. Skyrim, as I understand it, I haven't played that game, but allows a lot for that kind of mode too.
You must play it. It will consume your life for days and days and days. It was a great game that I played over the holidays last year.
Yeah. So, and I've heard a lot of people say that they love it for that. So it is an intense time game. And you do get some of the Fiero moments where, you know, you're like, okay, I got to get through this. I got to figure it out. And you get it and you're like, yes. But there are games that allow for that larger level of exploration. And sometimes you find things through the exploration. That's pretty cool. On the flip side, you know, from my own personal game experience, there are a number of games. I'll pick on the Lego Wii games, for example, whether you're talking about the Indiana Jones ones or Batman or the Star Wars ones, that, you know, they always build into those games little things to find and discover. And in some cases, that's just a big pain in the neck. Because while I enjoy going around those environments, I don't like looking up and down and beyond every corner to say, oh, look, here's a mini kit. And if I get that in another 7 on the same level, then a small model will appear for me at the end, and whoopee. So different games, I think, are designed to engage players in a multitude of ways. And for some, you know, getting every single power-up bonus you can possibly get is, you know, the key to success. And there are many, many, many websites that are devoted to helping people or identifying for people exactly how you go do that. So
yes. And you know, I was thinking about that because on movies and music, I'm a completist, right? If I like an artist, I want every one of their records. If I want if I like a movie and it's a series, you know, I'll get the entire series. Because I like to have the whole set, right? You got to collect all of them. but in games, it's very different for me. I tend to focus on kind of certain experiences that I want.
Right.
Which is why I like open-ended, open-world games like Skyrim, like many of the MMOs, until you get to kind of the end game, and then everybody's just questing to get better loot, and I get bored. But a couple of years ago, I got the Star Wars and the Harry Potter Lego games for the Wii, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, you would think, have both exciting things for me, collect all and open, but they bore me. I play them for, you know, a couple of days maybe. And I don't mean like nonstop for a couple of days, like 72 hours of hardcore gaming, but, you know, an hour here, an hour there, and I get bored of them. And I'm not sure why that gaming mechanic is so different than the game that I kind of set up for myself in media that I like.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly easier to acquire every album by a particular artist than it is to acquire every red brick, you know, or mini kit that's existing in a particular level in Lego Star Wars. Because all you have to do is go click, click, buy, 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 and you're there. But there are rewards for collecting them all, you know, that are intrinsic there too. And the games, I think, try to approximate that. But I guess my thinking here is that many games have a game arc to them where, according to this particular infographic, you know, you might travel around in different petals of this flower where you might remember my little parody song, I Game Alone, right? So there are MMOs out there where I'm happy as a clam to be in the MMO, but I want to, you know, forage and discover and find on my own. And there are others where I'm much more eager to be collaborative with others. And you can participate in those games in a multitude of different ways or, you know, at different times. with people, without people, focus on exploring versus collecting versus questing versus crafting. And these games, I think, are trying to hit the hot buttons of a larger set of players, because there are some that will get bored like you did. Mm-hmm. Or there are places where, you know, like in my case, I don't want to be part of a standard raiding party that meets every Thursday at 8 p.m. that I now have an obligation to go do.
Yeah, if only that met at 8 p.m., right? No, they want to meet at 11 p.m. and play till 2 in the morning. Right. And I'm sorry, I have a day job.
And
I can't join your raid. I have to get paid. Ooh, that'd be a good song. I can't join your raid. I gotta get paid. No, that's not a good song to tell with that.
So, how do you want to wrap today? Because I think we've kind of gone back to school. We've gone back to old school for us with Dances with Wookiees. We've identified some ways in which learning and gamification, if I can even use that word, you know, are combining in ways that we've talked about, predicted, seen, we think are definitely the way of the future. How do we put a ribbon on this?
Well, if we were to look at, as you said, you know, going around the petals, because I really hadn't paid attention to that the first time I read through this graph.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's interesting is if you follow the graph here, is it assuming figure eights? Because I was trying to follow around the edges, you know, just trace the edge, but the arrows are pointing in the wrong direction. The two on the, you know, the top and the right one kind of go in the same direction, but then the bottom and the left one go in the opposite direction.
Well, I think it's to make it easier to read.
Yeah, it's kind of a figure eight. So I think the key thing that I got out of the stuff that we saw today, and to kind of put a bow on this, is there are ways to take kind of the fun that's described in The Link from Andy and apply it to an appropriate business challenge and business model through a lot of the different moments that you see around the edge of easy fun and people fun or hard fun and serious fun.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, at first glance, and, you know, I confess I did not register on Code School and spend a lot of money to do these courses yet. But it does seem like they've taken a lot of these lessons and applied them into that appropriate business model and business context that provides these rewards for the players.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, there's more, in my mind, there's more to it in the end, right? You know, the making a game out of learning is not exactly new. It's getting a lot more play, no pun intended, these days than it has in the past, which is good. But to me, this is yet another part of an integrated whole. You know, there has to be a feed into reputation management. There has to be a feed into discoverability. There has to be a feed into a variety of other aspects aside from, okay, I've gone through this challenge. I've now met, you know, three or four or six of the coding challenges in the game, and now I've unlocked a video that otherwise I could not have gotten to. There's a bit more.
Which they, I, from what they show, they actually do, right? They have the reputation management.
Yeah.
They have the ability to, you know, brag about it to your friends. As you and I both pointed out, you have the ability as a developer to then connect it up to other sources,
right?
Or other platforms, whether that's your Facebook or your personal blog, or, you know, link it over possibly to something like Stack Overflow. You know, I can just imagine somebody posting a question about mobile development and HTML5 and the answer being, hey, you know, I just took this class. This is what I learned from it. Not an ad for the class, right? That would be immediately voted down.
Right.
But
what I learned from
here's what I learned, and here's the specific answers. And, oh, by the way, I'm currently looking at this other thing, or I currently have these reputations from this class, so there might be some more relevance to my answer.
And here's a link also then to what I'm working on GitHub.
Yep.
That shows that I know what I'm talking about and maybe will be helpful to you.
Matter of fact, yeah, here, download my code. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the nice thing about GitHub is you can say, hey, here's a version of that code that, you know, demonstrates that technique or that question. You can download it there. Or if you were to do it from a Stack Overflow expected perspective, you would actually just put the code in the link and have a link to the repository for the rest of it, right? Here's the snippet of code that reflects how to address the problem that you or the question that you posted. Here's that snippet. This is how it all relates. This is the theory behind it, et cetera. And oh, by the way, if you want the whole project, here it is on Git.
Yeah. So maybe the completion of this is when I think about examples like Khan Academy, what Stanford is doing for their online systems for learning. Which provide analytics into the learner and how they're learning and how they can watch the videos again and again and go through the modules and really know that they have achieved mastery. I can see where these kind of solutions become trickier and trickier, and they provide the challenge for the user to achieve higher levels of skill that could then be recognized by others in a more broad fashion. So it's not just that this is the branded walled garden you've achieved level 4 according to these guys. It's now something a bit broader because it is a fuller standard across the entirety of code environments or that will be more immediately recognized and understood by populations that say I require these skills. Where can I find them?
Yep. Well, very cool. Just as a quick reminder to everybody, we are available on lots and lots and lots of different social
channels.
Media and channels.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're on Stitcher Radio.
Yay.
We're on iTunes.
Of course.
We're on Facebook at facebook.com/gamesatworkbiz. We're on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz. We are, have our own personal Twitter accounts. You can find me at MichaelRowe01 on Twitter, on Google+, on Facebook, on you name it. And where can they find you, Michael?
About all the same places, and also at Carolina Big Blue at Twitter. So you can find me on the Twitter there too.
Great. So we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ. We'd like to thank the guys at Zebes Systems for their rocking version of the Moon Patrol game theme.